Hello and welcome to Patriotic History, episode number 3. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, and the date is Friday, the 18th of June, 2021. Before we get into the show, I would just like to remind listeners that Radio Albion is listener funded, and we do have a selection of cryptocurrency addresses for that purpose, and all donations are gratefully received. We can accept Ethereum, Bitcoin, Monero, just about any cryptocurrency you can think of. If you go to the Radio Albion site, you will see that there is a donations link in the sidebar, so just click that, and if you can afford to send us a donation, please do. Well, I'm very glad to say that we are back here, and we are enjoying producing this series for you, hopefully as much as you are enjoying listening to it. And of course, I have with me today, once again, my co-host, the Patriarch. Patriarch, how are you doing?
I'm very well, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, very good. Do you want to let listeners know where they can find your work and join your Patriotic Arts community?
Sure, so you can find the Patriotic Arts community at Telegram. It's Patriotic Arts Community. And also, if you want to check out my personal works, you can find it also on Telegram, Patriot. I'm on YouTube, Gab, Instagram, and various other social media. So yeah, jump on board, join the arts group and community if you can. And there's still time to get on this month's theme, which is ancient ancestral festivals.
So if you're an artist or a musician or a poet, that's the community that you want to join. And getting back to tonight's episode, I'm hoping that we're going to have a little look at the Tower of Babylon tonight. But I thought first it would be an idea just to recap some of what we went over in last week's episode, because there was quite a lot to take in there. Last week we learned that the Sumerians claimed their gods, the Anunnaki, made the black-headed people of Sumer by killing one of their own gods and mixing his blood with one of the humanoids that were already created. The Anunnaki then fertilized eggs from the black-headed people with sperm from Enki, the Anunnaki god, and they put the eggs back into a surrogate mother from the black-headed race to create a servant race. Finally, the Anunnaki claimed to have created the Adam, or the white man, by fertilizing an egg from the black-headed race with Enki's sperm and then putting it into the womb of the goddess wife of Enki, Ninkasag. We suggested that because none of these gods could actually create something new, all they could do is modify what had already been created, that they were imposters. We suggested that the Anunnaki were, in fact, the sons of God mentioned in Genesis 6 that took wives of the daughters of men and corrupted the way of all flesh on the earth. And there are a number of apocryphal books that talk about how angels or gods rebelled against God and mixed the kinds on the earth, which is why God destroyed his creation with a flood. So basically what we're seeing here is there are three different races at the time. There is a race that is descended from Adam. There's a race which is a black-headed race. And there is another race which is pretty much close to white, because it was made from one of the humanoids there and the Anunnaki. And so we've also got a race that was created by Cain, who was one of these kinds here, that was created with the Anunnaki and also with the Adamites, because Cain was created by the Anunnaki with Eve. So you've got a race which is very, very close to the white race, which would have looked pretty similar to the Adamites. And then you've got another race which is the black-headed race, and then you've got this servant race. So you basically got a confusion of races that's going on there. And then you've got, according to the biblical story, God was not happy with that, and there was a flood. And then we've got the records of this flood that was discovered by Woolley. We've got the evidence of this flood that he discovered. We've got the Sumerian records that talk about the flood, and we got the biblical one. I don't know if you want to add to that, Patriarch.
I think you've covered everything and gone over it. But yeah, I'm looking forward to getting to the next points.
yeah, I get a bit of a dry throat sometimes as I'm trying to go through all of this. And some people might say, well, you know, this is all a little bit religious. Well, the records of the time, we only really have religious records. And the biblical record bears out the Anunnaki record. It's just that the Anunnaki record or the Sumerian record is told by a different people. It's essentially told by the descendants of Cain, whereas the biblical record is told by the descendants of Adam. And the descendants of Cain were worshipping these fallen angels, or the Anunnaki, or the sons of God, whatever you want to call them. And the biblical record says that they messed around with the creatures that were already created on the earth, and they interbred with the daughters of the Adamites. And that's essentially what we're being told by the Sumerians, is that their gods, the Anunnaki, they messed around with the creatures that were already on earth, and they interbred with the Adamites. And then, of course, we got to the flood. Well, the Anunnaki may well have made the Sumerian whites by mixing themselves with the Adamites, and made the black-headed people by mixing with the already present humanoids, but they did not create the Adam or his kind. The Genesis account of the creation of Adam is written in the same format as the old Sumerian tablets that detail the Anunnaki creation, but they were written before there were names for the sun and the moon, calling them a greater light and a lesser light, instead of using the later terms created for them that are used in the Sumerian and Akkadian tablets. Because some people might say, well, why do you think the biblical record is from that same time? Well, it's written in exactly the same format, which shows that it was originally written on these clay tablets, and it would have used the same words for the sun and for the moon. It wouldn't have called them a greater or a lesser light, because they hadn't actually come up with names for these by that time. Do you want to add anything to that?
No, it's a good point. Some good points there. Like, I can't really think of... I'm trying to play devil's advocate to some extent with a lot of the points you're putting across, but I can't really question that.
Well, yeah, if there's anything that I'm not, you know, being really clear on that needs elaborating on, just let me know. The Anunnaki tablets also claim that their creation took place after the flood, but this may just be a way to explain why those different peoples were there after the flood. The flood itself was to get rid of the offspring that the children of Adam had created by interbreeding with the Anunnaki. It wasn't necessarily to get rid of the humanoids that the Anunnaki themselves had made. And that's an interesting point, because the Sumerian tablets, they claim that everything was destroyed, pretty much. And what they did, they talk about their own Noah, who is called Zarathustra, and he saved the seed of the humans, and he also saved the seed of the animals. He didn't actually put animals in the ark. And the Anunnaki then used whatever that seed was to recreate things afterwards. And also this killing it, they killed one god, and then they used his blood to create the black-headed people, and then they used in vitro fertilization with the semen of one of their gods and the eggs of one of the black-headed people in a surrogate womb to create this other race. And then they claim that they created the race of Adam by doing the same, but then putting the egg inside a goddess's womb. I mean, this tells us that the gods and the goddesses that they're talking about, these Anunnaki, that they had wombs, they were fleshly beings. And I think when they were talking about the children of Adam that were created, I think they're probably referring to the line of Cain, and that was their explanation of how Cain came about. And also it was his city, the city of Uruk, the first city that was the first important city before the flood was Uruk, and that was the one that Cain himself built, who named it after his son, according to the Bible. And the actual area that was flooded was called Eridu, which translates to the same word as Eden. So in the Genesis account, it calls it Eden, and the actual word for Eden was Eridu in Sumerian. And the ruling city of that area before the flood was Uruk, which researchers believe was the city that Cain built. There is no evidence to show there was any high stage of civilization before the flood. There wasn't even any actual writing But straight after the flood, a very high standard of civilization suddenly appears, centered around the city of Kish. And we pointed out that Kish is the same word as Kush, and that the people with this high standard of civilization were, in fact, Cushites descended from Noah's son, Cush. And the Bible tells us that the first civilization after the flood was started by his line, with a notable figure in that line being Nimrod. Do you want to add anything to that?
No, not really. I think we've covered a lot last week, but I've got some notes for the next paragraphs.
You just broke up a little bit then, so I don't know if you've got your browser open or anything like that. That might be interfering. No,
is that fine? I don't know.
Yeah, you're okay now, but when you were talking there, some of that actually broke up.
Okay. And I guess the only question I'd have is wondering if, I mean, Cain built a city, but from the biblical narrative, he had already... there was already cities and people around, right? Which, because he was marked, that he was scared that people would come across him and they'd kill him. So I just wonder, was he absorbed into another city, or did he just build his own from scratch, or was it a mixture of the two?
Well, there was five cities, I believe, originally in this Eridu. There were five cities there, and as you point out, when Cain left Adam and the Adamites, that's where he went to. So the Bible tells us there were already humanoids that were around, and they were the people that Cain went to see, and he built a city. And Cain had this Anunnaki blood, and he also had the Adamite blood in him, so he would have been seen as well, sort of godly person. I think the actual word itself, I have read research that says that the actual word king and queen actually comes from Cain, because he was seen as this special person. He's also a very, very wicked person, because he murdered his brother. And that city that was built, the Iraq, that was the main city that was the head of the Federation. And the Bible tells us that the people that actually did mix with these Anunnaki, because some of the daughters of men, some of the daughters of Adam, they interbred with this Anunnaki, that their sons became mighty men of renown. Some of them ended up being worshipped. When we look at the ancient myths of the Greeks and the Romans and all this mythology, a lot of the people that it talks about in this mythology were the descendants of the Anunnaki mixing with the with the daughters of men. So Cain himself would have appeared to be quite a superhero type, a mythic type. And I think the Adamites would have been as well, because you're talking at a time here where people used to be able to interbreed very, very closely. I mean, according to the legend, Eve was taken from Adam's rib, so they were very, very close. If you look at the pharaohs, they interbred with their sisters. Even by the time we get to Abraham, he's married to his sister, so that tells us that could go on without there being congenital deformities. It wasn't until much later on that people had to interbreed much further apart, so they would have been absolutely perfect beings. If you think each time you make a copy, it gets worse than the last. If you're using a photocopier or whatever, each copy you make gets worse than the last. So the very first original was Adam, and his sons would have been superhero types. You know, they would have been extremely muscular. They would have been extremely intelligent. If you think all of humanity was tied up, or all of the white man's humanity was tied up within Adam. So his offspring would have been, you know, like superheroes amongst the humanoids that were there. And then you've got a slightly different breed, which was Cain, who was blended with these Anunnaki, who we don't really get told that much about in the Bible, but they just get referred to as fallen angels or sons of God. And we can see that the Sumerians worshipped them as gods, but they were effectively the same sort of creatures. They were humanoid beings, basically. And we're then told in the Book of Jude that they're locked under chains of everlasting darkness. They're locked in the earth under chains of everlasting darkness. And some people think, well, that means that they're actually the black races. It could just mean that they're locked in the earth. They are no longer around, these Anunnaki that did this and messed around with the humanoids. And this is all, you know, the mythic explanations for why we have different races. And what I find really interesting is the fact that we didn't have a civilization until right after this flood, and it suddenly exploded forth. And the Bible tells us that that was started by the descendants of Noah after this flood. And where did they get this information from? You know, where do they get the idea of writing from, and the wheel and metallurgy and all these things that they just suddenly had? I mean, within 500 years, they had, in Egypt, they had built the Great Pyramid, and they still don't know today how that was actually done. And there's no build up to it. It's just suddenly all this knowledge suddenly came from somewhere. And you know, the legend tells us that it was the sons of Noah that actually created all of this. But we'll get more into this in a bit. Is there anything you want to ask me about in that I just talked about?
No, I mean, it's an interesting point that you made about, you know, the siblings of Adam and the genetics being, you know, a lot purer back then, to the point where, you know, they'd be able to replicate without any deficiencies. And I think some people might argue, like, in terms of cloning, you know, like you could copy data and a CD, it wouldn't lose quality. But I think we're talking about organic matter, aren't we? Where code can break down, and the nature of environment takes its toll on you know, on organic matter as a in general. So, you know.
Yeah, I don't think there'd have been any disease. I don't think there would have been anybody that was short-sighted. I think all of these things would have come along later on. Because the state of things is to decay, isn't it? Things don't become increasingly more complex as time goes on. They break down. Things rust. Things decay. Things fall apart as they advance in time. They don't actually get better. I mean, this is one of the criticisms that I will make of evolution. That idea is that things gradually get improve upon themselves, and they don't. Things gradually fall apart and decay. And I think that's what would have happened with the DNA. Basically, over the generations, we would have got weaker. If you think that everything that we have, it must have all been within that one first human. Everything, because we couldn't have anything that wasn't already there, if you see what I mean. You can only have what your parents give to you is all that you have, isn't it?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, some people speculate that, you know, Adam, the first creation was clothed with light, you know, and then obviously once the fall came, then they were aware that they were naked.
Light comes into a lot of this as well, actually. I think the Anunnaki were seen to be beings of light. And the clothing as well, they said that the clothes is what the gods wore. And these other humanoids, the black-headed people, they didn't wear clothes. And the wearing of clothes was a sign of being one of the gods. So basically what that is telling us is that these Anunnaki, they wore clothes. And I think when we look at Hindu myths as well, when they talk about gods walking the earth, they wore clothes. They were like human beings. And when you look in the Old Testament, when it's telling you about angels, they're like human beings. They sit there and have a meal with Abraham. They're humanoids. But humanoids are of a different type to what we're used to today. Getting back to this, all the kings in the king list, because we have a king list that we found from Isin that tells us all the kings from Kish. And remember, Kish is where the civilization began after the flood. The king lists show that all the kings there had what are called Semitic names, which means the language they spoke was descended from Noah's people rather than the Sumerian language. The King's List itself, or at least the oldest version we have of it, was not created until about 1,000 years after the Flood and the First Kings. After this first age under the rule of the Kushites, which is known to archaeologists as the Golden Age of Sumer, where all the innovations of civilization just suddenly appeared, Uruk took charge again, and this is referred to as the Heroic Age. And with the regaining of power by the Sumerians, their version of the Flood story would have also taken precedence, which explains why we have their version, which we found there, rather than the Hebrew version. And also, Abraham left Ur with the details of this Flood story around about 2500 BC or earlier. And the earliest Akkadian version of the story is from at least 500 years later. And this also explains why the Akkadian version is a mix of the two, and why the Akkadian pantheon of gods includes the Anunnaki as well as El Shaddai or Yahweh. I mean, they call him El Shaddai or El Elyon. And as I was researching this, I was looking up the latest information on when Abraham actually left Ur. And there's one estimate, and it's 2100 BC. Right at the beginning, just after the third millennium. 2900 BC, rather. 2900 BC to 2500 BC, because there are two points when Abraham could have left. One point was after the Akkadian invasion, which is round about 2000 BC. Or the other point that he could have left is before the Akkadian invasion and much earlier. And they worked out from looking at the Elamite library, or the Eblaite library that we talked about in the first episode, that talks about Sodom and Gomorrah still being there. And the kings that are spoken about in the story with Abraham, where he has a war with these kings, that could have only happened before there was a federation in Sumer. And the fact that it also took place when Sodom was still there shows that it must have been very, very soon after this flood. I mean, it could have been 2700 BC, something like that, which also explains why the flood version we have, which is the Hebrew version, why that wasn't found in Sumer, because obviously Abraham left there and he went into the land of Canaan. So he moved out of there, and he would have moved out of there with the information, because it was through Abraham that this story would have managed, or these tablets would have managed to make their way to Moses. And that's the latest reckoning on this as well. There's a very long document that I was reading yesterday about this that basically shows that Abraham left Ur much, much earlier than was originally thought. And I think this document only came out recently, and it's a proper mainstream establishment archaeological investigation of Abraham, basically. Do you want to add anything to that, or ask anything about that?
No. It's all kind of news to me, so I'm just digesting it, really. I mean, I'm sure I'll have some more questions soon.
And the Akkadians as well, I mean, that we'll get on to them later on, but they... The Canaanites came from the Akkadians, and the Akkadians were descended from Noah. And obviously they had interaction with the Sumerians as well. And their pantheon of gods includes El Shaddai or El Elyon, which is how Abraham addressed Yahweh. And they also mention Elohim, and then they also include these Sumerian gods. So when we get to the Akkadians and they invaded Sumer, they took on the gods of the Sumerians as well, and they also remembered the gods of Noah, which is where originally they originally came from. Well, before the flood, all they had was pottery, but suddenly right after the flood, they had goldsmiths and artisans that created the most amazing objects, some of which were found in the tomb that Woolley discovered at Ur. And remember, Woolley is who we talked about, who discovered this flood as well. One particular object found there was a type of harp or stringed instrument with an image of Gilgamesh on it. And this same image is found again on the purse clasp from the Sutton Hoo hoard, showing a direct connection from the British people. whether the Horde was Saxon or Welsh, going all the way back to Mesopotamia 2,000 years before. And the Saxons or the Welsh would hardly be likely to be putting foreign imagery on their precious crafts. Now, I was reading about this, and the guy that was investigating this was saying, well, because this purse clasp shows Gilgamesh on it, then it has to mean that it's the Welsh, because his research has shown that the Welsh come from the Cimmerians, and the Cimmerians go all the way back to the Trojans, and then from Troy you get back to Mesopotamia. And he was saying, well, the Saxons, they were in Germany, but of course the Saxons originally were part of the Cimmerians. They were the Scythians, and that's why Germany is also referred to as Scythia in 5th century geographers, British geographers, called Germany Scythia, because the Germans, the Saxons, actually came from the Scythians, and the Scythians were originally in the same area as the Cimmerians. They were the same people. So whether the Sutton Hoo Horde actually came from the Saxons or the Welsh, it doesn't really matter, because both the Saxons and the Welsh originally came from that same area. And the fact that they have this on this purse, this shows this connection that goes all the way back to Mesopotamia 2,000 years before. So it shows that, you know, the British people, the European people, we originated in this Fertile Crescent, and we spread out from there around the rest of the world.
Yeah, I mean, this, even the Saxons have left their mark throughout different parts of Europe in terms of their kind of culture, their style of buildings, like these parts of Romania. I think in their Transylvania, there's kind of distinct villages that have, you know, Saxon-esque type housing. So, you know, to say that they started in Germany and there was exclusive there or in the UK, then, I mean, it's, you know, they definitely left their mark in various places. And so, you know, to think that they'd have, you know, the Epic of Gilgamesh kind of imprinted on their, you know, on their gold and armament, kind of just, it does suggest that there's a definite connection. It's kind of like the Declaration of Arbroath, you know, where he makes a statement of the Scots, you know, journeying through Spain from Greater Scythia. And then also it goes on to kind of remark about how they've got the ties to the Israelites crossing the Red Sea. You know, and this is a, you know, documented article. You can go back and read it. It's like pretty sure that a lot of our ancestors, you know, 1,000 years ago plus, were much more well aware of our heritage than we are today. You know, I think a lot has been covered up, and with a lot of these recent, you know, archaeological discoveries, things are only coming to light now, and they're re-emerging.
Well, they don't want us to have a connection between us in Europe with these ancient peoples of the ancient world, and that connection is there. It can be seen there. I mean, you can see it in the mainstream documents. I mean, you can find it on Wikipedia. And one of these connections is this master of the animals. If you look at the image that's on the purse clasp, it's the same image. He's holding up two greyhounds instead of two lions. That's the only difference. And obviously, because you've got greyhounds in Europe, and they're more likely to have lions in Mesopotamia. But it's quite clearly the same image. And the tin from Britain, if it wasn't for the tin in Britain, then there wouldn't have been a Bronze Age in the classical world. And we'll see when we look at the Indus Valley that what was going on in the Indus Valley in India, they had these connections with Mesopotamia, and that's about as far east from Mesopotamia as Britain is west from Mesopotamia. So they've got records of them being in the east that far away, and obviously there is a connection to them that far away in the west as well. The ancient world was all connected up. We did have ships. We had horses, and we had writing. And I think when we actually look at the level of civilization that they had, it really wasn't that different to today. You think in Mesopotamia they had canals, they had three different types of boats, they had animals that were pulling canal boats along, so they were able to get their produce and maneuver it around. They understood the calendar. They had metalworking. They had writing. A very, very similar way of doing things to today. They had sanitation as well. They had their waste was taken out from the houses and, you know, by water into waterways. They had proper sewage systems, something which, you know, some parts of India still don't have today. And yet the white people that were in India 4,000 years ago, they had them. They had them in Mesopotamia. They had three-story houses as well. You know, it's the level of civilization that you can look at and say, well, you know, that's got to be white people, basically. And then the more you look into it, the more you find that there is evidence to show that they are white people. You know, you've got all the images that they actually made of themselves in Sumer, the Sumerians and the Mesopotamians. As I was saying, even the Cainites, the ones that were descended from Cain, they would have been very, very close to white people anyway.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at some of the buildings, the bricks as well are actually similar size that we use in our houses today. So it's almost like they started off small, the early civilizations, and they got a bit bigger and bigger.
Oh, there's huge, huge stones that they used back then. And also, whether they were speaking the same language, I mean, you had Adamites, you had the black-headed people, you had the Cainites, and you had a servant race, and they're all speaking Sumerian. So they all get referred to as Sumerians. And when you have a representation of the white people there, I mean, that just shows us that they were white. And also this DNA tests that we mentioned in the first episode, which shows that they were closest to Europeans than anyone else. And that's the Indus Valley people. And also when we find other ones that are saying that the Sumerians were just like the Indus Valley people. And then we find the Indus Valley people were the closest to Europeans today than anyone else. Well, the tomb of Mesqalam Dug from 2600 BC, which is just 300 years after the start of the Bronze Age, was also discovered by Sir Leonard Woolley in the Royal Cemetery of Ur in 1924, which contained numerous gold artifacts, including a finely engraved gold helmet with an inscription of the king's name. This helmet has such fine detail on it that it depicts individual hairs. It really has to be seen to understand just how skilled the artisan was. It is made from one sheet of 15 carat electrum gold and has the hero of the good land engraved upon it, as well as the king's name. By observing the contents of this royal grave, it is very clear that this ancient civilization was exceedingly wealthy and had a very high standard of craftsmanship. And you can note that the parting in the hair on the helmet also proves that these people were not black, as if anybody would think that they were actually black. But you can tell from the styling of the hair that it's a white man. You think about that, just 300 years since they discovered bronze, and they're making 15 carat electrum gold helmets with individual hairs sculpted onto them. Did you get a chance to have a look at this helmet, Patriarch?
No, I didn't actually. I'll definitely make sure I have a look next time.
Yeah, I'll be putting it with the image that goes with the podcast.
If you drop me a link, I'll be sure to check it out.
Yeah, it's going to be on the image to do with the podcast. So basically, you know, it's unexplained, the fact that this civilization just suddenly appeared like this.
Yeah.
And back then, 2600 BC, it was still Kushites. This was before Uruk took over again. Well, classical Sumer ends with the rise of the Akkadian Empire in the 23rd century BC, which is 700 years after the flood. And the Akkadians are known to us as Semites. And it does actually mean descendants of Shem this time, as they were actually descendants of Shem. Shem's descendants included the Persians, the Israelites, the Spartans, the Achaemenids, the Pelasgians, the Thracians, and the Assyrians. And the Akkadians were nothing like the people that we think of as Semites today. The famous Sargon of Akkad, who some think was the biblical Nimrod, was the first ruler of this empire, and he refers to it being a multi-ethnic empire with the black-headed people being a different people to his own in the Neo-Assyrian tablet called the Sargon text. And he says, "The black-headed peoples I ruled, I governed, mighty mountains with axes of bronze I destroyed, I ascended the upper mountains, I burst through the lower mountains, the country of the sea I besieged three times. Whatsoever king shall be exalted after me, let him rule, let him govern the black-headed peoples. Mighty mountains with axes of bronze let him destroy, let him ascend the upper mountains, let him break through the lower mountains, the country of the sea, let him besiege three times." So you can see there that he's ruling over these same people. They're a different people to him. So I guess what you had was a caste system, basically, which is the same as we have in India, a caste system that's actually based on race. And I think that's what we actually had here was a caste system that was based on race. Now they call these people Shemites because they're descended from Shem. Yet the Persians actually spoke an Indo-European language. So you can see that even though these people are descended from Shem, they may not actually be classed as Semites. And also, we have people that are descended from Ham that are described as Semites, because what the Semitic actually means is just a language from that Near Eastern area that is not Sumerian, rather than actually meaning anybody that is actually descended from Shem. Although these Akkadians, they were actually descended from Shem. I'm sure you must have heard of Sargon of Akkad, not the British guy.
Yeah, not the YouTuber. No, not the civic nationalist.
No, this was the first empire, basically, first multi-ethnic empire. Was the Akkadian Empire.
Yeah. I find it strange how it always seems to be kind of black-headed people that are always in the lower castes. It's some kind of coincidence, isn't it, I think?
Well, the Sumerian tablets say that's what they were created for. They were created to serve the Anunnaki.
Yeah, for sure. But, I mean, in every society going, civilization, it's always... I don't know. I guess it's the white privilege that comes into power.
Yeah, there's just something there that you know, that's just yeah. The way that
I don't know
it
what
always
it is.
Was. It's only today that we think everybody is equal. And the weirdest thing is they say today, oh well, race is only, you know, it's a new thing, it's a social construct. No, it's not. It's in the earliest records that we have as human beings. It's in the first writings that we have. It's talking about the black-headed peoples. So it's not anything new. Sargon is said to have built Babylon about 30 miles away from Kish in the south, and his people also rebuilt Nineveh in the north after it had been destroyed by an earthquake. And these two cities would become the centres of the Babylonian Empire in the south and the Assyrian Empire in the north. And they were both the empires that we actually knew about. We didn't know about Sumer until sometime in the late 18th century, when they were digging around in these mounds around Iraq, and they discovered all these tablets, and they realized that there was this civilization before the Babylonian one, before the Assyrian one, and that there were these people that were living there, and they were basically the Adamites and the Canaanites. And where they were all speaking Sumerian, they're all referred to as Sumerian, but in actual fact there were at least three, probably four different races that were actually in that area. But it's the Babylonian one in the south and the Assyrian one in the north that are really talked about in the Bible. And I guess it's because of the information that we had in the Bible that sort of informed us up until the archaeological age and we started digging these places up. But there are two main questions around Babylon that we may be able to answer after looking it up on Wikipedia. And they are, was Sargon Nimrod? And why does it say in Genesis chapter 11 that the whole earth was of one language and one speech? Yet in Genesis chapter 10, it tells us that these are the generations of Noah's sons after their families, after their tongues, in their lands, and after their nations. So what it is saying there is in chapter 10, it's telling us that the nations spoke different languages, they spoke different tongues, And yet in chapter 11, it tells us that the whole earth was of one language and one speech. And obviously, that last question is put in there on Wikipedia to try and discredit the biblical narrative, to try and make it seem unreliable. Now, I think we can answer these two questions. That last line from chapter 10 is actually telling us that chapter 10 was written much later, after the nations had been formed and after they had settled in their lands. It says this at the end of the chapter, which is also the end of the tablet, which I just quoted. And this was likely taken from the national records of the Hebrews much later on, as the cities of Asher and Nineveh, etc., had all been built by the time this tablet was created. Because it mentions them. It mentions the names of all these cities that were built much later after the flood itself. And the beginning of the tablet is not "these are the generations of the sons of Noah, Shem, Ham and Japheth," which is at the beginning of the chapter. That line is actually the last line of the tablet before, which forms chapter 9 and tells us the story of Noah based on the three tablets belonging to Shem, Ham and Japheth. That's why they tell us how old Noah was when he died. So you remember in the first episode we said about how Genesis is written and how you can look at it and you can see that it's made up out of these tablets, and at the end of each tablet it said these are the generations of, and that means this is the tablet of, and it also tells you how old the person was when he got the tablet created. So it tells you when it was written, who the tablet belonged to, and sometimes it tells you where the tablet was actually made as well. So what we've actually got at the beginning of chapter 10 in Genesis is it's telling us that the chapter 9 was the tablet belonging to Noah, Shem, Ham and Japheth. So it's just an example of the way that the Bible is actually put together in the wrong way, because it's included that in chapter 10, and it really should have been the end line in chapter 9.
Yeah, it really changes. It can change the context. I mean, that's the case for a lot of kind of doctrines have been kind of distorted from the same kind of patterns of kind of chapters breaking up the context of obviously what's scribed from a tablet or previous writings. But I just wanted to make a point as well that the first time, I think in the KJV, King James Bible, first ever time the word Gentiles is used is in that verse that you mentioned about these are the nations of the sons of Noah. These are the nations of the Gentiles. And so when it's referenced later in the New Testament, it is referring specifically to the nations, the offspring of Noah. And today the assumption is that Gentiles refers to everyone who's not a Jew, but that's obviously wrong.
I think that's the bit because where it says the isles of the Gentiles. It means the isles of the nations, because means nations.
But I think that's what it means, the isles of the nations. But the word Gentiles is used, so I'm just making a connection there that the Gentiles, if anything, is kind of referring to the white nations essentially.
Oh, it is. Whenever it says Gentiles, you should substitute nations for that. And it's Gentiles comes from gentilis. It's the Latinized version of the Greek word ethnos, which just means the ethnicity, people that are all of the same ethnicity, basically. It doesn't mean non-Jew. That's a corruption, really, that's been brought in recently. So basically, we've got this first chapter 10, which is obviously written much later than chapter 11. Chapter 11 goes back to just after the flood. And at verse 10, we read that these are the generations, meaning this is the tablet, of Shem. And he was 100 years old and had just had his son Arphaxad. So the tablet was probably created for Arphaxad to pass on. And a line is later added telling us that Noah lived another 500 years. But at the time the tablet was written, he was 100 years old, so not long after the flood. So And chapter 11 tells us the story of the Tower of Babylon. So it's basically saying the Babylon, the building of the city of Babylon, took place very, very soon after the flood. And halfway through the chapter is actually when it should have finished, when that chapter should have finished. It should have finished when the tablet was finished. So it's saying that this took place at a very early stage. The tablet tells us that after the flood, the Noahidae went into Sumer and started building a city, probably with the help of the indigenous people who the Anunnaki took credit for creating. The Noahidae would have appeared like gods to them, and as they all spoke one language, the temptation to breed with them would have been pretty high. And I think that is what upset God, the same thing that upset him the first time and made him destroy Sumer with a flood. The Noahidae and the indigenous people wanted to make a name for themselves, a name for all of them in that one area when they were supposed to be spreading out across the earth and starting new nations under the names they had been given. So the languages were confounded, and we are told that they left off building the city and were scattered abroad across the face of the earth, or the face of the land. And this could have been as early as 100 years after the flood. After that, the civilization began in Kish with the Cushites, and 500 years later, Sargon invaded and took up building Babylon again. The earliest reference we have to Babylon is late in the 3rd millennium, telling us that a king was laying the foundations for new temples there, which implies that there were already old temples there and a city or settlement that was there before. So we know that Babylon was very close to Kish, basically. It was about 30 miles away from Kish. So really, when we hear that civilization began again in Kish, you can really include Babylon in that area. Yeah. It's only 30 miles away. And we already know the standard of civilization was inexplicably high at this point in history, as we also had the Great Pyramid of Egypt that was built within 500 years of the flood at Sumer, some say just 300 years after. The white people around at the time would have been orders of magnitude more superior than we are today. Just like an original fades slightly each time a copy is taken from it, each successive generation has become slightly weaker since that time. I think we can really see that we're weaker today than we were at the time of the war and before then. And really, all you have to do is look at the statues of, the Greek statues and the Roman statues of what men used to look like and compare that to how men look today. You know, it shows you.
I think there's a few different levels going on there. Obviously, the culture and civilization, the typical work that we do it on a day-to-day basis. But yeah, I think definitely there would be some regression.
It would not have taken many people to marshal the indigenous into it building a city. They were the ancient equivalent of machinery, just like the slaves of the south used to be referred to as farm machinery. So Sargon was unlikely to be Nimrod, according to this reading of the Bible, because the building of the Tower of Babel took place far too soon after the flood for Sargon to be Nimrod, because Sargon didn't invade until hundreds of years after. Alternatively, the biblical telling may be less specific and talking generally about events that happened centuries before, which it clearly is in chapter 10, but chapter 11 does have the format of an eyewitness tablet, like the other early tablets of Genesis. So when we've actually got an eyewitness that is telling us this, you know, it's different to when you're reading something like the Epic of Gilgamesh, which has the Sumerian story of the Sumerian Noah. It's not an eyewitness account of what was happening. Whereas when we look at the biblical account of it, it's clearly an eyewitness account because of the way that it's written. It tells us who the people were that were writing it. And Sargon, Sargon was also a Shemite, while Nimrod was a Cushite. And since Babylon wasn't far from Kish, it is quite plausible a king from Kish started building a city there. After the Noahidae were scattered, Asher went to the north, and Sargon came back from there to invade Sumer some centuries later. We should also bear in mind that the length of time people lived for was much longer back then, if we are to trust the age given for Noah. As more generations were created, the life length went down, and also the ability to reproduce with close relatives was lost. But you can see that this must have been possible back then with the highest castes, as it was the tradition of the pharaohs in Egypt, and still working at the time of Abraham and Sarah. It wasn't until much later that we find evidence of it causing congenital problems, such as have been found in some of the mummies from the later Egyptian dynasties. So I think that's, you know, just the fact that we had that tradition, if it was going to cause harm, and if the offspring were going to be all messed up, they never would have had that tradition. And yet the pharaohs had this tradition, and we see this tradition that's in the Bible. So that's another pointer to things gradually weakening, our genetic code gradually weakening, until we had to interbreed with people that were further related from us. I think, was it third cousin, three times removed is supposed to be the optimum?
I think so, yeah. Third cousin is when you get enough genetic variation to avoid, you know, any kind of problems in terms of similar genes. There's enough variety to perpetuate more healthy genes. But it is quite interesting, isn't it? And if you was to read the age of some of the biblical characters, in the Old Testament, it really does make you think that it must be fairy tales. But that's being, you know, judged from our perspective, given our current level of understanding. But obviously, when the world was different back then, they could probably think ahead and wouldn't even be able to fathom how people would live so short, you know.
Well, this is one of the things. We look at the world today and we assume that it was exactly the same years ago, and that may not have been so. And in actual fact, the eyewitnesses at the time tell us that the world was different. I mean, as part of this series, I'd like to have a look at the age of catastrophe and the electric universe theory, which says that the planets may well have been in different positions. They may well have been closer to the Earth at the time, which could have caused all sorts of different things. We could have had a different day length. We could have had a different year length. We just assume that everything is the same today as it was back then. We assume that carbon has always decayed at the same rate, and we do carbon dating. Yet how do we know that carbon has always decayed at the same rate? You know, it may have been different back then. It's like when we look at a country and we say, well, or say we look at Detroit and we see that Detroit is all full of black people today, and then saying, well, that means Henry Ford must have been black because Detroit is all full of black people today. And it's the same with just assuming that the conditions that are around us today were exactly the same back then. And the electric universe theory comes out with lots of proof to show that it wasn't, and that a lot of our theories about physics are completely wrong. And they say, well, the reason why we've had to come out with this idea of dark matter and dark energy, which is 99% of the universe, we can't actually see and we can't prove that it's there. That's because their theories for physics are completely wrong. And they've had to say 99% of the universe isn't there to make their theories work.
Yeah. I mean, it's literally a house of cards, isn't it? And in many ways, science, modern day science, is built up just as much on kind of essentially doctrines, just as much as any other religion. It's a perspective, isn't it? Obviously you always need to stay as close to the truth as possible, but that's harder. It's easier said than done, because you have to be willing to compromise your own belief system, you know, and just kind of stick to the hardcore facts and truth and take a logical, methodical approach.
Yeah, and a lot of the time it's going to challenge you as well. I think we all have a temptation to want to believe something that is flattering about us. And a lot of history isn't flattering. And you might find that the way that you think things were, in actual fact, it was the opposite way around. And rather than sort of covering that up and hiding it, which is what seems to go on with a lot of historians, right, that rather than admitting that actually they were wrong, that they keep going in the wrong direction. And I think you know, well, a lot of what we try to do here at Radio Albion is trying to right those mistakes that were made in the past, and also admit that, you know, we don't know everything. I mean, I'm, you know, just surmising what I can from the information that I found out, and saying, well, this is how I think this was, after looking at the evidence here, and putting it together, because the mainstream view will tell you that that the Bible was copied from the Sumerian stuff. And what I, when I look at it, it looks to me like the Bible was the original stuff, and you had two different peoples. You had a people descended from Cain, and you had a people descended from Adam. And obviously, the record that was descended from Adam, that actually left the area with Abraham 300 years after, very, very soon after the flood. So you're not going to find those records there in Sumer. You're going to find them in Canaan, which we do find records of it with the Canaanite gods and what have you, and also then the records when Moses actually wrote them down, and also the fact that the way that the books of Genesis are written show that it wasn't oral teachings passed down over the ages. It was tablets written in exactly the same format as these tablets that are from Sumer. So just the fact that it was Moses writing it down 1,000 years later, he's still writing down eyewitness accounts, because that's the way that those eyewitness accounts were written. And he wouldn't have known that. He wouldn't have known that at the time. He wouldn't have been able to fake that. And because of that, and then the way that it ties in, I think the Sumerians, I think they were proto-Jews, basically. I mean, my own Christian identity beliefs say that the Jews can be traced back to Cain, but looking at this, when we actually look at these Sumerians, if you look at the images of them, a lot of them do have that Jewish nose. Some of them, I mean, this is quite funny, but some of them are rubbing their hands together in the same way as you would get like a caricature of a Jew that was drawn today would be rubbing his hands together. Yeah. And these Sumerians are drawn like that. They also had usury. They had they were loaning at interest. Whereas the Europeans didn't have usury. We weren't involved in usury at all. And we can also see that they were fascinated by gold. These Sumerians, you know, they had a massive thirst for gold. And this tomb that was found at Ur, it was filled with golden artifacts. And also they were artisans. And as well as, I mean, today most Jews are known for money lending practices, but they were also known for being artisans as well, years ago. So you can see that there are a lot of links between the Sumerian peoples and the Jews. And then you've got the Noahide, you've got the Adamite types, who were the farmers. Obviously, the European types are the farmers. And we mentioned about Aryan and the link with agrarian, even though that's just the way that it's pronounced. I'm not sure that there is a linguistic link between the two. And we're going to get into languages next week. We have got more notes here to talk about the language that everybody spoke, but I think we should probably leave that before getting into that section next week. But is there anything that we've been talking about tonight that you want to bring up again? Is there anything else that you want to talk about?
Yeah, there was a point I was going to make, or well, a question really, and it refers back to the languages, you know, from the narrative of the languages being confused. Now, I just wonder if you think that was a organic process, or do you think it was a kind of a more divine intervention whereby there was just the languages were combobulated and they, you know, just started speaking differently, or was it just that they eventually branched out, as you would get into, for example, people branch out into Europe, and then over time different languages occur through cultural differences and whatnot?
I think it just happened just like that, because you had the Sumerian language and that was it, and there's nothing that actually came from that. That didn't evolve from anything. That just came out of nowhere, and there's nothing that is descended from that. And then you suddenly have Indo-European and Semitic, and we'll look at both of them next week, but they just suddenly appear. So I think the languages were confounded as it does tell us in the Bible, and the people spread out. But we can get into that next week. We'll get into the language side of it, and we'll get into the connection between Semitic and Indo-European, because there is a connection there, even though the language establishment will tell us that there isn't. But we should really leave it there, I think. So thank you very much for coming on today, Patriarch.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. Look forward to next week.
Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. Next week will be the Patriotic Alternative Monthly Update. We will be back the week after. And, of course, we do hope you have a great weekend ahead of you.